The Mixing Music Podcast is proud to say that we have a lot of free resources outside of the actual podcast. Visit mixingmusicpodcast.com/links to find access to our free PDFs and free resources.
Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome back to the Mixing Music Podcast. I'm your host DK, and with me, as always, is my lovely co-host. Let's get it on, Lou.
Bow chicka wow. Sorry. Bow bow bow. I'm really trying. Can we get a DMCA strike for that?
Yeah, do that.
I don't think it's recognizable enough.
There's a today's episode is something that nobody wants to hear, but I think is really important. So we're going to keep it really brief, and I'm going to try to title this episode something that is more clickable, because I have a feeling it won't be unless I change the title a little bit. I want to briefly talk about mental health and how that relates to our jobs, careers in the studio, and some of the symptoms that I see, things that, and because this, the reason why I think this is important, and I think part of the reason why you should give this some attention and not click away immediately, and you should give this episode a chance, is because this does directly affect your income. It directly affects how you work with other people. It directly affects whether or not someone else will recommend your services to another human being, to another person, whether and how well you work with clients, how well you work with managers and everyone around you. This is you figuring your shit out, getting your head screwed on straight in a world that is reliant on monetizing and articulating the parts of life that keep you from keeping your head on straight. Meaning, what makes some of the, I mean, we all, like some of the best songs come from heartbreak and loneliness.
Oh, yes. Look at Taylor Swift.
Drug use.
Classic.
Yeah, abuse, drug use, parental trauma, bullying, right? These are some, like,
divorce.
This is where real art derives from. And this is, I don't want to say that it's not just the music industry, but it's beyond that, but arts and creatives. So what I'm not going to do is, on one end, I'm not going to allow anybody to be assholes and kind of do the David Goggins thing. I don't think that David Goggins is kind of an anomaly among the, I mean, I've done many talks about that. It's kind of an anomaly among, like, the highest achieving ultra runners anyway. That's not really a good, healthy mindset. Most people at the top are not like that as far as in the running world. And then also, I'm not going to allow these excuses to happen and what we happen is like, so if you're listening to a podcast episode about how to improve your life, how to get better at your career, you're probably what people, what psychologists would call an internalizer. So you take trauma. So if you have lots of trauma, then you internalize it. So the bad things about internalizing is that you tend to take the blame. You feel like it's your fault. But the good thing about internalizing is that you look to improve. You look to be better. And from all the shame that is had, that is bad, the shame shouldn't be there. You're motivated to learn. So like usually book readers, podcast readers, highly educated people are more internalizers. And then those that continue to be the victim and blame other people. And we've all met many people where they're just incapable of taking any responsibility also comes from a place of trauma. And that's called externalizing or an externalizer. What we're going to talk about that as well a little bit. And we all do a little bit of both, right? Sometimes we externalize, sometimes we internalize, but we're mostly dominant in one or the other. I do want to preface that neither I or nor Lou are actual psychologists, neuroscientists, therapists, licensed in any state. We're just two dudes that do music for a living, and a personal, you know how like every podcast host has a few peculiar quirks or like topics that they're really interested in. Like, for example, Joe Rogan is like comedy and MMA and Egypt, you know, like he's like really interested in those topics. For me, it's like Eastern philosophy, it's mental health, just philosophy in general and psychology, right? And probably a few other things as well. Lou has his own things as well. And this is kind of one of those episodes where we're going to spew our personal personalities into this episode for your personal benefit. So what we're trying to do is not say that we're right, but we're trying to give you another perspective to help you cope and deal with other people, yourself, your ego, and in order to make more money and to get better gigs and to increase your network or your net worth. in the music industry. Because I do think that this is, just as much as I think like a software engineer should be caring about mental health, dude, even more so with artists, if anything. Obviously, what I don't want to do is say that it's more important for artists because it's just as equally important, but I do think that there's significantly more issues with people that are typically tend to be higher in openness and lower in conscientiousness, as we've discussed in the past. Lou,
mm-hmm.
I want to ask without going into it, because, with, less interest in these topics, you're a little bit more broadened in your perspectives on just like recognizing patterns as a human, not as like as an analyst or someone that's deeply into psychology and philosophy, like, but as like, just a human. And you're pretty emotionally intelligent. So, I want to ask you here. You've definitely seen both successful and unsuccessful people with severely harmful coping mechanisms, personalities, toxic personalities, unhappy perspectives, nihilistic perspectives in life. And you've also seen some of the happiest people that you've ever met, like you've ever met, I assume, as well.
Oh, yeah.
Tell me about some of your observations about what are some of these happy people in the industry doing, right? And what do you think, and I don't want it to be judgmental, but like, what do you think is happening for the people that can't get it right? That haven't figured it out. First start off with like, who's getting it right and why?
I think that there is one clear sign of who's getting it right every time. And it's, your community that surrounds you. And, how
me specifically?
Open...
No, I'm just kidding.
Well, then.
Are you just complimenting yourself, Lou?
I wish. No. Honestly speaking, like some of the people that I look forward to working with are people that I'm actually excited to see for more than just the reasons of our work. And people that usually fit that bill, I've noticed that it's not just me that looks forward to seeing them. It's many people that look forward to seeing them. And it's not about they have this opportunity that they can grant them. Because obviously we're talking about somebody in a successful position, right? But a lot of times it comes from, and I made a, a slight post about this before, but this is kind of one of those signs. Recently, I posted about my Musso thing that I broke 200 million whatever streams on whatever, you know, right? That was cool. But in the thing I posted, like, you know, as cool as that factor may be, I still think that one of the coolest things that ever happened to me is when I first started my first studio, I talked to a friend of mine and said, you know, one of the things I want to do this year is get my first placement. And a week later, he actually put me on his album. And it was one of those things where it's like, I didn't ask for this. It wasn't something that I necessarily did that, but it was something where he heard somebody wants to do something, wants to push for a goal, and they actually help and support the people around them. And people typically in a good mental state that are in successful places, a lot of times people want to be around them because they know that they're the helpful type. So whether there's a big project involved or not, they still have that community of friends that are in that industry that are just happy to be around them, not just around them for that. Because I did notice that a lot of people who seem to have a harder time, people who don't seem to be having as good of a lifestyle or as healthy of a lifestyle, tend to be very pessimistic about when people come around them, saying they only want to be around because they see an opportunity. It's very different how they approach the community that surrounds them. When people are typically more open to just people just kind of not necessarily just being around, right? Nobody's trying to waste their time or anything like that. But when people say, hey, I'm just trying to learn this and that, and they say, cool, here's an opportunity. Come help me out with this. It could be something small. And they're very open to that opportunity. They grow into that. And then when it's their turn to reach the hand back, so to speak, they're very open to giving people opportunities versus a lot of people who had to kind of go through the mud of it and hold a lot of resentment towards like how they had to come to their success, typically don't want to have, you know, the reach back kind of process, because as much as work as they had to do and they know that other people are going to do, they don't necessarily want to share it out of fear of losing it. You know, a lot of people that are very successful are very open in kind of growing and building the people around them, while people who are not very healthy mentally in a successful position tend to be a little more scared of sharing or building people up, if that makes sense. You know, they'll try to take every opportunity, even if it's not the one for them.
Yeah. Now, this is the part where I'm very blinded by bias here. Mm-hmm. In your opportunity, would you agree or disagree, or I think it's irrelevant that I find a connection with the higher you go up and the more successful someone is, typically the more figured out they are, the more stable mm-hmm. that they are mentally, emotionally.
Yeah.
Is that something that you agree with, or am I blind?
Oh, yeah. The reason I think it still aligns with what I said is just because if you haven't really figured yourself out and you're not confident with yourself and the way you move, a lot of times you just try to see if you're detecting any negatives in everybody else's approach around you versus just saying, why don't I give them a shot? And if it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out. That's okay. We gave it a shot and we move on. You know, a lot of people who just aren't really there, super confident in themselves or in the people around them, they tend to hold everybody at arm's reach.
Yeah,
and that kind of works against you career-wise. Like, you don't want to be at arm's reach with everybody you know and work with.
Yeah. There's a thought that I might bring up a little bit later that I'm having right now.
Cool.
But something about... So let's first get into this. This is... I do genuinely believe that this has everything to do with income right here. I do feel like this is something that we talk about all the time. Like, with what we do, even with mixing... even as a mix engineer, which is a technical art, there's a lot of technical know-how, understanding current up-to-date technologies, plugins, software, as well as analyzing future and current trends, creating trends, organizing your own taste and the taste of other genre cultures, geographic cultures, even the therapy of working with an artist, understanding how to deal with a neurotic artist and helping them get their full vision out, although that may be more recording engineer and producer songwriters that mm-hmm. have to deal with that. But there's something about having, and there's two types of people that I find, that I see. There's probably more, but I'm going to break it down for the sake of the podcast here. There's two types of mentally well people. One is the type of person that has obviously figured it out and gotten over themselves. And another popular type is someone that seems to have figured it out actually has an insane amount of self-discipline. So they look like they figured it out, but they actually haven't. And I do think that that's partially who I'm going to be talking to as well, because that's not sustainable. At some point, everybody has a mental break. And more importantly, what's the point of having all this money and having all this fame and not fame, but like having all this money, having all this time to not be happy? Imagine that.
Yeah.
Imagine that. That doesn't make sense. So we're going to talk about that as well. And I do think that that is dangerous. So David Goggins is within that camp, right? A little bit. I know many producer engineers that are within that camp. And there's nothing wrong with that. I think self-discipline and being in control of your emotions, being stoic, not falling into mental breaks is incredible sign of self-control. I do not think it's healthy, nor is it good in the long term. And I do think that that's kind of where assholes arrive, is eventually they do well because of that self-control. And then they start doing better, become successful. And then they let go of that desire to hide that part of them. This is why I partially think that this is why, like for me, in my mind, being around both non-wealthy and wealthier, or being around non-successful and more successful groups of people, I do think this is a personal bias of mine. Forgive me. I do think that I don't want to be divisive here and make it sound like it's a rich versus poor thing, but I'm going to for the sake of this argument. I do find that the wealthy get a bad rap on media by people. They think that most people think and understand, feel that the top and the wealthy parasitic by nature. They are wealthy because they take from the bottom. I do not find that to be the case most of the time. I do not deny that there are a few people like that, but I think that the ratio of perception to reality is incredibly off. Incredibly off. To the point where we've discussed in the past where I feel like if you hate the rich, what you're doing is manifesting poverty. This is something I will always say that. It is very difficult for a human mind and an ego to maintain the dissonance of wanting money, wanting wealth, and hating people with wealth. You cannot sustain two complete and opposite thoughts without having to accept that you are a bad guy. That's just making the problem worse. Okay, so a couple things that I actually really like and really want to talk about, and these are some secrets of the people that are wealthy. These are some secrets of the people that are doing well. This is something that is very common, undeniably common. And if you do not agree with me, I do think that this is an issue of your perception and your bias. And to be quite frank, even if I was wrong, which I'm not, I do think it's not helpful, and it is very unhealthy to not believe me and to not agree with me, okay, on this topic. Even if it wasn't true, you should think it is. You should hope that it is. But luckily, it is true. And this is my bias, and you can speak on this too, Lou, because I need your opinion on this. There's a few things that every wealthier, more successful person has in common, outside the scope of self-discipline, which is kind of skews everything off a little bit. Those that do well have a huge abundance mentality versus a scarcity mentality. If you don't know what that is, look it up. Scarcity mentality is the type of person that believes in a net zero game. If you get a client, that means there's one less client for me. It's direct competition. If I give Lou a shot and a host position, because this podcast used to be a solo podcast with just me, and a scarcity mentality is, if I give Lou a spot on my podcast, that's going to take away attention from me. it's going to stop monopolizing my brand, you know?
I would like to state that that for sure has not been the case.
That has not been the case, right?
No.
So of course not.
Yeah.
And if I thought that, then we wouldn't have had the success that we have together.
Yeah.
Right. And that's the point, right? So like, we all kind of go through a phase of like, okay, my friend who is also a mixer got a job, and then you get jealous. Right.
I think everybody does that.
Yeah. Or like,
I don't care how
worse,
successful you are. Like if it's something cool and you wanted it as well, there's a part of you that's jealous. It's okay to admit that.
Yeah. Jealousy is a useful emotion tool to tap into and to analyze. But this is more true when you feel spite and anger towards someone that like you auditioned for a mix, someone else auditioned for a mix, and they were the ones that got it, not you. It's very difficult to not take that personally, you know, and then you get angry at that other person when they don't deserve it. Right. So abundance mentality, scarcity mentality, look into that. Someone that is happy, which leads to doing well, I think, is someone that is also service minded. So someone that's able to think outside of themselves. There was a podcast. This is the part where it's kind of like a little bit out of my depth because there's less personal interest in this. So I wasn't paying attention as much. But there was a podcast that I was listening to where who was it? Someone was suggesting someone with some sort of respect in the field of psychology was referring to the cyclical manner of thinking about yourself. So I'm sad, and then that turns into I'm a bad person, and it becomes more and more absorbed in self, which creates more. It's a very cyclical thing where it creates more sadness. Thinking about self is where sadness starts. And this aligns with some Buddhist philosophy as well. To kind of get outside of yourself and to think about others and serve others is incredibly important. Some of the happiest and best people that I know are outside doing like soup kitchens, finding ways to serve in whatever capacity, whether it's like church or Boy Scouts or something else, serving family, you know, by hosting a big ass organized party in their backyard. Lou, that was a joke of you there. It's like hundreds of people. That was well
literally almost 200 people in my backyard.
That's crazy. Also, like so stereotypically California Mexican, dude. It's crazy.
Actually, just general Mexican. You see this in Mexico too.
there was an episode of Theo Vaughn, and he's talking about, it's like, dude, yeah, it was probably a Mexican family reunion. There was at least 2,000 to 3,000 people there.
Dude, I don't know if I ever told you, but I had a rule growing up in Mexico, like, because I would spend every summer and Christmas there to be with my sisters, right? But I had one rule. Because I spend most of my time in the States getting my education here and everything, I made it a rule to never date in Mexico because I could not remember who is like
who's my your cousin?
Cousin. Yeah, because in Mexico, like,
serious?
It could be like your third cousin, like your cousin's cousin, and that's technically your cousin still, so you'd still call them cousin.
Oh,
like,
man.
You don't make the distinction of third cousin or, you know, cousin from the, you know, whatever, the spouse's side. No, so because of that, I'm like, you know what? I'm just not dating in Mexico at all. That's the safest bet. You know, it's the safest sex? Abstinence. That was the level of dating in Mexico for me. Abstinence.
I think that quote from Theo Vaughn was actually from his commentary on a dude that called in about accidentally banging his cousin.
Oh my God.
It's like an incest episode. He's like, dude. Anyway, the third point of what I was going to talk about with abundance and service after that comedy break there was, reading a book. I haven't talked about this book in a while, but Lou, you've read it. I've read it a couple times, a bunch of times. This is one of my favorite books when it comes to business for the music industry, doing what we do. This is one of the secrets. And in fact, you can even go as far as like in Masonic brotherhoods, in Masonic fraternities. This is one of the books that is passed around quite often in order to help each other grow in business is The Go-Giver. The Go-Giver by John Berg. Bob Berg, that's who it was. And one other dude, The Go-Giver. Very simple, easy to read. It's probably like a 4-hour read max. Very short, easy to read, story-wise.
If you want to listen to it, it's even half the time.
Oh, it's 2 hours?
It's 2 hours on a listen.
Oh, for real? Amazing. Yeah. And that's 1 hour at 2x speed. That's a podcast episode.
You can listen to it between 2 1-hour lunch breaks at work.
This is one of those books that like you should read and highlight and mark up and annotate and things like that. Yeah. The Go-Giver. Fantastic. It's about how real winners have the abundance mentality and have the service-minded, community-minded mentality. And they think like real networkers, like the best people that are good at networking. Or let me talk about the worst networkers. We've done an episode about networking. The worst networkers are the ones that go around saying, hey, I do this, buy from me. Hey, buy from me. This is what I do. Buy from me. Give me your money. This is what I do. I'm a mixer. You want to hire me? I'm looking to be hired. That's the worst guy for networking. You know who the best guy is? Hey, I'm Joe Schmo. I like Tetris. You like Tetris? Man, that's crazy. We both like Tetris.
Yep.
Oh, you're asking me about what I do for work? Oh, that's kind of irrelevant, but I'm a mixer. Oh, you need mixing services? Oh, shit. Well, I guess I'm here. You know, like, that's a good networker, right?
This is why I always tell people the wingman is the best bet. I don't think there's any better in-person sales pitch than a proper wingman. Because let them do the pitch. Don't do the pitch yourself.
Yeah, or like it'll naturally, if you're truly passionate about your craft, it'll naturally come up.
Yeah.
It is almost impossible for your mind to not relate to the things that you're constantly thinking about. So in a natural conversation, you will accidentally pull the conversation or push the conversation into a direction that you are thinking about. So I wouldn't even worry about it. It's going to happen naturally. Number four thing is like someone that is often involved in their community in different ways. So a lot of healthy, wealthy people.
Actually going to bring that up. You mentioned earlier about soup kitchens. I kid you not. I notice soup kitchen posts. Like when people post about helping the needy and things of that nature in different ways. But I hate to say this. I've never met somebody who's not necessarily in the upper echelon of success in our industry posting about this. It's always the upper echelon that's posting this. Like, you know, StatQuo, he manages for a bunch of people and all that. And he's actually developed a lot of my friends' careers as engineers, producers, A&Rs, this and that. Because he always brought people up with him. He had that abundance mentality of like, hey, I'm going to have you take care of this project for me, this and that, blah, blah, blah. And whenever they needed him, wanted advice, even me, I've been able to call him and ask him for advice myself. And he was always open to giving advice on what I should do to improve this and that. But he would always post about how he's at a soup kitchen. It didn't matter how much money he made or if he could put his time to something else, he always made time to give back. Absolutely. That's something that I've always noticed. And like, this is the same guy that's running around with like Dr. Dre as a regular. He was managing Game. He was managing Keisha. He was managing Eminem. You know, this guy was with everybody, you know, but he never stopped having time to give back.
Of course. And this goes into the idea of community, and this is kind of goes into Adlerian philosophy, thought, psychology here, but the importance of community and feeling like a community. And Alfred Adler suggests that like the solution to most of humanity's problems, including sexism and racism, is understanding the depth of community and treating everyone as if they're part of your community, expanding your perception of community. But anyway, won't get into that. But the part is community and taking care of other people. Even the idea like this, it could be something that is significantly different from soup kitchens, which is very obvious, easy thing to do. But even something like this, and what I'm not trying to do is equate this to StatQuo going to soup kitchens.
No.
You know, but this is also a form of community and service. This podcast, Lou and I don't make a ton of money from this, you know, and there's not... This is the part of the reason why we do this. Sure, it might be a little bit of ego and wanting attention, but it's a lot of genuinely, truly. I think when it comes down to it, I think Lou and I know for I can see it more in Lou than in myself because of ego or whatever. Lou has a great desire to share his knowledge with others for not anything in return. He's not necessarily an educator. Lou, you are not necessarily an educator at school. You just like, you're an educator in life. Yeah. The point was like, you're not a professional educator.
No,
you're
that's just, not what I do with my time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You educate for, like, you're fulfilled by educating.
Yeah.
And I do think that that's, like, very beautiful and very poetic there. And I think it speaks volume in your desire to be a part of community and to give and to service your community. Even with the idea of, like, okay, like, back in Utah when I had my studio, like, when I first started, and I don't want to be praising myself as an example here, but, like, it was all about community within the hip-hop in the area, because hip-hop was very segregated from the rest of the music community in Utah because Utah has a thing with swear words. And
still to this day, it makes me turn my head weird. A little, like...
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, it's very weird. It's very weird.
Yeah.
So we kind of created this community, made this open mic night, and that was, like, very beautiful. And in turn, I hate to say this, and I didn't do it for this, but I made so much money from providing a community for people that didn't have one. And taking the forefront opportunity to create a new community, new to Utah, in that area. Same thing with In The Mix, with us two together, mm-hmm. with the interns and stuff. And the community of, like, allowing people to come in for lessons, right? We still have friends to this day that still thank us all the time of, like, the opportunities that we created during that time, just from going forward and building a community, being open to that. Again, like, this goes beyond, and you can get creative, but the important part about this is expanding the idea to self, to not just be you, but your family. I do think that there's something, I don't know, and I'm going to speculate a little bit. One of the variables of why people that tend to get married young and have children early tend to be more successful faster is because, partially maybe, because of this ability to think beyond self. Self now then becomes them and their wife and children, their spouse and children. So the sense of self grows. The sense of responsibility grows. Anyway, the last thing, and this is a big red flag, a huge red flag, and I'm noticing this more and more and more. I try to actively work on this for myself because I need to be careful with this, and this is a great indicator of when I am down bad and I'm feeling bad.
Mustaches. Dude.
Someone that is actually doing well, is doing well, going to do well, rarely ever complains. And it's not like a complaint thing, like they're complaining on this specific, it's not like they don't have an opinion. It's more like we know many people that are incapable of doing anything than complain.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? There's a difference between one time off complaining, having an opinion, like what I'm doing right now, versus someone that can't help but talk shit about some topic or someone constantly.
Yeah.
And like we said about earlier, like when thoughts are on your mind, you naturally turn the conversation towards something. There are so many people, and I hope it's not a majority of people do, but sometimes I get scared because it starts to feel like it is. There's a lot of people that are fucking miserable that cannot help but talk shit.
Yeah.
Very intelligent, hyper aware people. Go ahead,
I've noticed this a lot with, like, so I know plenty of artists, and I'm sure you've met them too, along the lines of the constantly comparing and complaining about someone else's success versus, like, I could have done that. Oh, you know, I could have done that better. I could have this, that, blah, blah. Like, it's cool to have your opinion, but when you hear it constantly from somebody, it makes you want to work with them less. And I hate to say, but, like, it doesn't matter what position of the work you're in, whether you're the artist or the engineer. If an artist hears an engineer that complains a lot, they don't want to hire that engineer. And when an engineer works with an artist that complains a lot, we don't want to record an artist that's constantly complaining. And not about us, just in general.
Dude, speak on how it's the silent killer of careers.
Oh, my God. What was the rule at the studio? Kill the vibe, you're fired.
Yeah, dude. Or, like, if you're, like, a bad human being that can't stop complaining, you know what, like, a rational human being won't ever tell you to your face? Wow, dude, it's really unpleasant talking to you.
Yep.
this is the issue. And then this becomes cyclical because then the person that is already lonely is like, why is nobody wanting to talk to me? And then it further continues loneliness.
Yep. And you just start spiraling more into that abyss.
And then it starts spiraling more into externalizing. Fuck, everybody else sucks. It's the rich people's problems.
Yep.
Yeah, it makes sense that you would spiral into that because life is a bitch and life is a silent killer. And if you don't mm-hmm. learn how to take responsibility and practice some form of self-discipline, it's going to seem like it's everybody else's fault.
Yeah.
And the real people that really need to hear that lesson usually aren't the type of people to seek for self-improvement by listening to this podcast episode. You know, so it's like, and definitely aren't the type of people to go to therapy. Usually the type of people that are open-minded enough to try therapy are more internalizers. So this is the danger of it all, right? But yeah. This is the secret, just truly, is that someone that is pessimistic and nihilistic by nature slowly but surely becomes more saddened and becomes more lonely, becomes more segregated from the community, and then starts to blame it on everybody else because they're unable to see that they themselves are the problem because nobody has the balls to directly tell them. Now, there's another example. There's been a few examples. I am that asshole friend who will tell you directly if I'm having an unpleasant conversation with you. My most recent conversation with a friend of mine that we hadn't met for a long time, I think I scared him off. I meant to do it out of love. The way that he spoke, the way that he did, he's like very little, completely nihilistic, a lot of complaining. But when it came down to me, there's a lot of compliments. So I felt very brown nosy because he's talking shit about everybody else except for me, right?
Mm-hmm.
How else am I supposed to interpret that? He was complaining about people who brown nose. So he was unaware that he himself was brown nosing.
That's
and I think to be fair, that is normal. Most people that are brownies are even hyper intelligent and very self aware people.
Oh my god! Did you say are brownies?
Are not aware that they're brown nosing. Okay.
But did you describe them as the term brownies?
People no, not on brownies? Purpose. No, no.
Oh, okay. Because I was about to say that's an adorably fun way to call them.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
Like you
no,
brown nose,
not...
are you brownie?
Identity politics. No, just kidding. All right. But anyway, the point is, this is very dangerous. And if you again, anybody that like wants to get has ample opportunity to give. This is a conversation that a buddy of mine was having, and I don't want to name names, but a buddy of mine who's doing really well, someone mm-hmm. that you know, Lou. And he's like, I'm like, dude, like, what is it that you see with other people that like determines whether or not they give you a chance? Like, what is it something like qualities of someone that like you want to give opportunities to? It's like, dude, the first thing that he said was like, bro, brown nosing. Brown nosing. That's the first thing. Any sign or sight of brown nosing, immediately turn off. Nope. If they're incapable of seeing me at the same level as them, and how do you see someone that is obviously doing much better than you? How do you subconsciously talk to them as if you are an equal to them? There is one way, and I'm going to talk about that in the future, in the next topic here. But yeah, they're unconsciously brown nosing because they genuinely are incapable of seeing that they too are a normal, rational human being just like the other person. And that leads to, and it really, really comes off as, what are you trying to get from me? You're not nice. You're nice to me because you want mm-hmm. something from me. And that is an absolutely dangerous, Lou, I know you've had people do this to you. And I'm sure most people are. And I'm sure that you recall times that you've accidentally done it as well.
Yeah.
Can you, because I could tell these stories, but I want to hear your stories.
As far as me doing it or receiving
both,
it?
Either. Whatever comes to mind.
So for me doing it, I think this is very early career me, where it's like you have the ego that comes with, what is it? What is the curve? When you don't know anything, but you feel like you know a lot.
Oh, the Dunning-Kruger effect.
Yeah. I was definitely on that peak of Dunning-Kruger.
By the way, if you're listening to the podcast, search Dunning and Kruger, the DK effect, cognitive bias on the podcast list.
DK is telling you to look up DK.
Yeah, there's a podcast episode that I did probably about a year ago that's specifically about this form of cognitive bias. And I think that episode is actually fucking fire. Yeah. I think that it is very important. One of the most important listens on the podcast episode. Go back and look for it. It was about a year ago. Anyway,
fun fact, this past weekend, I had like a very proud moment with Anna, my wife. Because while we were talking about something and kind of sharing our opinions to each other about something, she's like, listen, I know I don't know enough about this. So like probably whatever I say right now is probably going to sound stupid as hell. But, and I'm like, I like that you prefaced like, you know, in advance, like I don't know enough to really speak on something, but this is my opinion on it. You know, it's like, I would respect somebody more that, that at least lets me know like, hey, I'm just letting you know, like, I don't know, but this is an opinion. You know, this isn't factual. This is just opinion on something. But when I first started, that wasn't the case. I'm on my end. You know, I felt like I knew, right? You know, and I think everybody goes through that. At a certain point, we think like, holy shit, these mixes are starting to sound better. They're starting to sound great. I could do what Jason Joshua is doing. I could do what Ken Lewis is doing. I was about to say Kenny Beats, but I'm like, no, I've never put myself in a comparison with Kenny Beats or anything, you know, but that dude's making beats like nothing, like fucking sandwiches. But the reality is this, like at a certain point, like I would talk to different people and like kind of like try to push myself as like somebody who's doing something and is like, you know, doing well at it. You know, I'm very confident in my skills and I want to push myself as that. But instead of getting to know the person in front of me and actually understanding who they are and all that, like, I'd just be like, oh, yeah, if you ever want to work together, if you ever want to, you know, this and that, only to later find out that they actually were far superior career-wise, far more successful, far more everything. And they were the much more humble person in the room. They were not talking shit about anybody. They were actually there to help, support, and all that. And I'm there just like, yeah, you know, I could teach you a thing or two, this and that, but I'm looking at them as like somebody beneath because I'm over here trying to boost my own ego. A lot of times when people are brown nosing, they're trying to put themselves on the pedestal that they're brown nosing, right? Like, let's say I'm trying to brown nose you. I'm trying to put myself on the same pedestal that I see you on while pushing everyone down. But the reality is like, dude, that person that you might be pushing up, trying to boast up and brown nose, they might be looking at you exactly and know exactly what you're doing, how you're talking, why you're talking a certain way. And at a certain point, you just look stupid. You really just look stupid. It's one of those things where it's like, I don't know why you're trying to size yourself up to me by having this casual conversation with me while talking shit about others or talking about how your product is superior to others. But those are the same people in our industry. And it's a very small network in our industry. Like the more you grow, the smaller you realize this industry really is when you're in certain niches, right? Like I've heard people talk shit about like the TZO mixes being too bright. And I'm like, actually, they're not very bright, but it's kind of funny that you're talking shit about TZO mixes to me, being that, you know, I'm friends with TZO. Like, me and him are actually cool. Like, if there was ever an opportunity for you guys to work together, I don't think I could put you in the same room because I kind of know you as a person to talk shit. But even if you were trying to brown nose me, like, I wouldn't want to work with you because I know that you're talking shit about your colleagues, the people you're looking to work together with. Like, why would I want this around? And I feel like I shot myself in the foot early on in my career when I first started in like certain rooms because of that type of mentality that like, oh, you know, if I work closer to the more successful person in this studio, if I work closer together with this producer, you know, and really state my case, you know, they'll want to work with me. But instead it came off as too pushy, which is why I always tell people like, yo, don't be too pushy. Don't start talking too much about pick me, pick me. That stuff doesn't work, you know. But yeah, early on, I don't think I was mature enough in my career to really see that.
Yeah.
If people are dieting now more than ever before, then why are nearly 1 in 3 American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier than ever, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that instead of turning into fat when you consume it, turns into ketones, which is a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body. So, by getting more MCTs in your diet, you essentially flip a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which can flush out excess fat and calories. And he's created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it's a delicious drink. I love how incredible it tastes. All you do is add a scoop to water, enjoy, and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized. So, if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to countrymd.com/energy and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's countrymd.com/energy. Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50. In order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today.
How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month? They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster. That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.
Yeah. I mean, it's a common understanding, and I think this is correct here. It's like being miserable is more like a disease, and it can be passed on. Mm-hmm. It makes other people miserable. Is very common, and it's very few of the few that can get beyond that. And I think that's the point here. And I think people are subconsciously aware of being miserable. They don't see themselves at the same level as somebody else. That's why they resort to talking shit. And this is why the phrase, like, you'll never see a hater doing better than you. That's why that is a phrase that exists and is only validated by people every day. And we see it on like any social media ever. Even people that are like trolling and anger baiting. You'll never see a hater doing better than you. And what I'm not trying to say is people that are not doing well and doing exactly the opposite of what we're suggesting, will use that and say, everybody's a hater. They don't know my vision. Everybody's a hater. Now that's a very wrong and moronic use of that concept. And the correct concept was be happy and don't let anybody else bring you down. That was the correct use. Not everybody's trying to make you miserable. That's not the correct use. Nobody's trying to make you miserable. That's a form of pessimistic narcissism. We're not going to get into that. That's a form of externalizing there. The last thing is to maintain a sense of optimism. So I was going to talk about how do you go into a conversation with, let's say, like Tizio, someone like Tizio, or how do you get into big rooms? And this is a conversation that we have sometimes with the interns. It's like, even if you had the skills to run Pro Tools sessions, if out of nowhere, out of the blue, you had to run a session for Beyonce, could you do your best work? Like, just from the nerves of it all.
Yeah.
Like, if you don't have the experience working with the people at the top, because it's not even about a skill thing at that point. It's about, do you feel that you're good enough? And if you don't feel that you're good enough, you will not you will be nervous and not be able to perform at the best of your abilities, thus making you look worse. So how do you get to a point where you feel like you deserve to be working with Beyoncé in a healthy way, not in a delusional way, all right? And I think one is experience. People always negate experience. Lack of practice. They've been mixing, been producing for a few years maybe. And then all of a sudden they think that they're the king of the world and they're like, they're very impatient. And I do think that like 3 years is a quite a long time, depending if you've been doing like, you know, a few songs a week.
Consistency.
Dude, if it's consistent, I don't think it's a small amount of time, but you're working in an industry where like people that have been doing this for 10 years are at the same level as you potentially. And they're also waiting for a shot. Right. So this is a long game industry. There's the supply demand of like jobs, gigs to people that are able to give that it's a little bit off balance. So be aware of that first off, not in a bad negative way, in a pessimistic way, but just be aware, be conscious that you have to keep your head down and don't disrespect and dishonor the amount of time that somebody else has put into their craft, not just your own. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Honor the amount of time. Let me say that better. Honor the amount of experience that somebody else has. Do not discount. Do not dishonor that. Okay. The last thing that I was going to say is this is a personal belief. This is DK speaking here, coming from you. You've heard, you know what I think in my background here, but this is a conclusion that I've come to. And this is, I'm going to keep it open-minded. So based on your religious or non-religious preferences, based on your philosophies on life, on God or lack of, it is super important. It is incredibly important to clear your conscience. And I want to generalize it to there. If truly you for sure knew that you were doing everything you possibly could to the best of your ability, there would be no guilt weighing you down from speaking to someone like above you, what you perceive as above you, in a tone of want, right? So if you truly felt like you were at the same level, your mind would naturally speak to them like a friend, speak to someone above you like a friend. There would be no brown nosing at all, subconsciously. Clear your conscience. Mm-hmm. Whether that means that you need to start saying your prayers, it's more based off of what you grew up. This is more something that like culture that you grew up with, and you can change it, but it takes a lot of effort. The culture that was given to you, the theology that was given to you, the philosophy that was given to you, what I'm not trying to encourage someone is to become blinded and dogmatic. But what I am trying to say is to clear your conscience is very different for everybody. And this is where it's open-ended. I recommend everyone clear their conscience. If you have addictions that, to be honest, objectively aren't that big of a deal. For example, biting your nails, right? Biting your nails objectively, not that big. Cracking your knuckles, even better. Cracking your knuckles objectively, not a big deal. Not a huge deal. But if for some reason you are poisoned with the thought that it's really bad, why don't you just stop? It doesn't matter if it is bad or it's not. Like, if you think it is, and you know that you shouldn't, you've been taught that way, you can do two options. You can blame the person who taught you and say, why is this something that is so neutral was represented to me as something so bad? And that's externalizing. Mm-hmm. Or you can internalize it and be like, my body, I trust my body and I trust my instincts. I trust my thoughts. I trust me in turn. It's truly the sensation of trusting yourself and letting go of that. Some people, in the opposite sense, and this is where like extreme forms of mental illness come to place, like bipolar disorder, schizophrenia, even psychopaths actually kind of can tell. Even if they have no remorse themselves. Some things shouldn't be done socially. These values are not given by a specific denomination of any church or religion. This is humanist values and then can be further articulated through theological reasoning and wording and values if needed to be, or if that's what you were brought up with, but get your minds fucking straight. That's the point. And the reason why we talked about experience first, and I talked about experience first, is I think that's one of the things that's keeping you from having a clear conscience. If you truly felt like you deserve to work with Beyonce because of the experience that you had, because up until now, the years that you've been working on, you've struggled and you've faced those struggles with confidence and courage, and you've made all the mistakes and you've learned from those mistakes, then once you step in a room with a Beyonce, then you will feel like you deserve to be there naturally. That is not something that you work on, and that just is not a decision that you make. You will naturally, your consciousness will determine that for you. I want to be very clear about this. So it goes into the point of, again, going back to the main part here, which is about how does this affect our income and affect our growth and affect our careers as mixers? Mixers are incredibly, tend to be more technical, analytical, must have higher levels of conscientiousness along with openness. Look those up if you don't know what those are. Tend to be better organized than your typical artist, per se. Has to be, right? Balancing between these projects. This is the problem where it's like people will hide it with self-discipline as well. And I don't think self-discipline is hiding the shame that you feel, hiding your lack of confidence. I think self-discipline should come into the form of being aware of where you lack and actively working on removing those. I think that's where real self-discipline lies. Again, what's the point of having all the success, potentially whatever money there is, some money, lots of money, enough money, whatever it is, what's the point of any of that if you don't get there without happiness?
Mm-hmm.
People get it wrong. People think workaholics work, work, work. People with trauma work, work, work. And they work because they think that the money and the status and the career will bring them happiness. But they little do they realize that happiness is what they sacrifice to get there. They ignore their children. Their wife or spouse is very lonely. They don't give them the time and the attention. There's an episode that we talked with Bob Horn about this with his health. And he spoke very openly about it, about his sacrificing his personal health for his career and how it wasn't worth it overall in the retrospect. There's standing up for yourself is a whole another conversation I think is unrelated to this one. But one of the things that I want to talk about, the last thing, the reason why I'm talking about this episode and brought this up is because a good friend of mine and the former co-host of the Six Figure Home Studio started a new podcast. And I don't mean to promote this podcast for free here, but Chris Graham is starting a podcast called The Healthy Home Studio. I won't get into the entire background or speculate about what I think happened. Doesn't matter. Bro had a mental break, had some issues, went to therapy, feels better for it. And in that trailer clip of that podcast, he mentions, little did I realize that music and the chasing of a career in music was a coping mechanism, really shielding myself from true trauma. And then one day it came out. The monster in him came out and he had a mental break and it tore things apart. Again, won't get into too much detail. And so that sparked the creation of this new podcast, Healthy Home Studio. And I'm sure it'll be great. I don't know. It's not my place to give a review. I haven't even listened to any of the episodes. But I do think that is an important concept. We do music to cope. We do music because it's therapeutic. We love music to emote. But there's a difference between music is therapeutic and music is therapy. All right? And this is especially dangerous, and this is where I speak to Americans specifically. Truly, sincerely. Okay, this is very dangerous to think this way. And this goes for all monotheism here. If you are sincerely depressed, or if you have issues emotionally, right? God's miracle is not by taking that depression away. God's miracle is providing therapists for you to work through. God's miracle is the prescription that a psychotherapist will give you to alleviate your depression and the invention of. God's miracle is not just ripping it away from you without any learning experience. That does not happen. That does not happen. You must be better, and you must change your perspective on that. And the reason why I'm bringing this up specifically with monotheists is because it's one of the few dangerous thought tunnels that can lead to that. Somehow be like, if I just trust God, I'll be healed. No, bitch, you had like actual sexual assault history. No, you need to see a therapist. Like, that is like, you need to speak with a professional who can help you cope with this. God's response to your prayers, if you believe in God, is the therapist, is the culture that we're creating and normalizing this. The fact that you can do that and go to therapy and no longer do people think that you're crazy, that's God's miracle, all right? All right, I'm done. I'm done on my high horse here. Okay. It is a very dangerous thought process to think otherwise. And the problem is that it's not harmless to just have the self-control to keep it in. Because that shit is generational. That shit is generational. So if you don't figure it out, your kids will have to. Or maybe if they don't figure it out, your grandkids will have to. What a selfish thing to do. Go figure it out. Go figure it out. Right now, culturally, it's acceptable to go see a therapist if you need it. Right now, it's culturally acceptable to work on yourself and want something better for your kids. Right now, there's no war. You have the time, or like in... Okay, let me rephrase that. Right now in America, there's no war on our lands. It's a moment of relative peace, right? You have the time and there is the capacity to work on it. This is this whole C.S. Lewis quote that I won't get into that I always used to talk about. It's like, there's never going to be an opportune moment. Those that want knowledge so badly will seek for it through unfavorable conditions. Favorable conditions never come. That's the quote. All right. I'm done. Again, going back to Lou, can you help me come back to the main thesis, which is how this has to do with what we do for careers? So I'm going off on a little bit of a more rant there. Yeah. Bring me back, buddy. Bring me back.
All right.
Sorry, I called you, buddy. That's
just
so,
remember this. I hate to say it once again, but don't be a vibe killer. Like, realistically, that just comes down to, like, don't be a brown noser. If you got something going on, you don't need to be the type to actually manifest that shit on the external level. If you want to go to therapy, you honestly should. I would recommend it to anybody. I used to go to therapy as a kid for a long time, which, you know, as long as I've known DK, DK has always called me emotionally intelligent. And I've always just kind of looked at it as, like, I don't know what the fuck that means. I basically do. But at a certain point, you would be surprised what therapy can actually do for you. Without going into like my childhood stuff, like it was actually at one point court ordered for me to go to therapy as a kid. Not because I was like a chaotic kid, just like,
nah,
you know,
you
my
like
own family
people,
story
dude.
And shit. Yeah, I was over here in a murderous
like,
clown suit and people's Ring doorbells, you know. No, I definitely never dressed as a clown. Actually, scratch that.
Flashing.
I do have a childhood photo of me in a clown outfit. And get this. It's the best childhood photo because have you ever seen a clown with white face paint and all that kind of stuff, but bald?
No. Well, yeah.
Well, it turns out that as a kid, I was maybe like 4 or 5. I got lice. And instead of like using lice shampoo or anything before Halloween, they just shaved my head. So I looked like a bald clown as a 4-year-old. Dude, I don't know. Fun memory just on the topic of clowns. But the reality is this. I think had it not been for therapy, I would have been a very different person considering the surrounding, I guess, events of my life early on. And even as an adult, I still think sometimes like, yo, you know what? I think I should go back some days, you know, just for my own self. Not because anybody's telling me I have to, but if you ever think to yourself, like, yo, like, some days I'm more pessimistic and all that, you will probably voice it at some point. You will probably bring that up while talking to friends and clients, and there is a way that people react. Some people don't feel comfortable around that, and people aren't necessarily meant to be your therapist, your friends, your clients, anybody. Which means that if you're using music to cope and all that kind of stuff, if you have any hobby that you take to cope, just know that that helps in the short term, but doesn't help in the long term. And if you want to find success, part of it is actually understanding yourself, how you respond to certain triggers and things of that nature. If you're a very jealous type, there's a chance that that's kind of deep-rooted in you. And that jealousy will keep you from certain success.
You know? I agree.
Yeah, so going back to the book, The Go-Giver, a good example of this is a guy that is constantly trying to work his way up to the point where he's asking for support. Like, hey, I heard you're the guy that has access to this guy that usually builds up very successful people. Can you get me in contact with him? Once he gets in contact, the guy starts telling him, he's like, look, you got to hang out with me for a bit, but I promise you, you'll get the lessons you're looking for. And one that stood out to me that I've always really enjoyed because this is kind of my mindset in most cases was the coffee, which was an assistant just made a cup of coffee. She just asked, hey, you know, while you're waiting, do you want a cup of coffee? He says, sure. He tastes the coffee and he's like, oh my God, you could sell this to everyone. You could make millions. Like this coffee's so good. And the guy explains once he actually comes back, comes into the room, he's like, you know, one of the issues that I found with what you said is that you wanted immediately to think of profit versus I would have said something along the lines of, I want to share this with the world.
Oh, yeah. It's like,
yeah, your mindset went to what do I have to gain from this versus how can I get this in front of people?
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah, that's right. It was, yeah. So they said, it's like, okay, how can I make money from this? Or like, how can I make money is a great question, but it's a terrible first question.
Exactly.
I think that's what the book said. It's a great question, bad first question.
Yeah. Yeah. And that to me is one of those things where it's like, you may not realize it at first, but the way you respond to things says a lot about you. And so when you're in a conversation with somebody, I'm not saying we can tell because I'm not going to claim to always be able to tell and be right when I'm calling on somebody's personality. But there's a reason why I'm very quick to cut certain things short or just, you know, not work with certain people because of their responses. Not because of if we like the same things or if we have the same gear or if we work with the same people, but sometimes it's, you know, the way you responded was a red flag.
Yeah,
you know, you might want to check on yourself. I know I respond in red flags ways sometimes, and I may not realize it.
I literally did it on Saturday. I was talking to someone at a party, and I like overthinking my conversation, like I always do. I realized, I shouldn't have said that.
Yeah, and sometimes on my end, I'm like, I probably shouldn't have shared that detail. You know, oversharing is a thing that can help be helped with therapy.
Yeah, being a red flag.
Being a red
flag
overall.
Cut off the conversation short, and I'm like, oh yeah, that makes sense why he did that. My bad.
Yeah.
But it goes into like the idea of like conversing is also like is a form of practice too. Like you need to practice having conversations.
Yeah. One of my favorite things that I've recently done that really shows if somebody's actually into a conversation or not is if they ask me for my opinion on something I have no opinion on or don't feel entitled to have an opinion on. Somebody recently asked me about like, so, you know, what do you think now that Biden stepped out of the race? And I'm like, you know, to be honest, I don't know. You know, do you think Kamala's going to be a good president if she wins? I'm like, you know, I have no idea. I don't have enough research. I don't have enough time in front of me to really worry about this right now. It's not something that's on the forefront of my mind. So that might not make me the best American.
Nice.
But I'm going to be 100% honest with you. It's not that I don't care. It's just that I don't know. And so for that reason, I don't think I'm entitled to give you an opinion that's based around anything other than opinion.
Yo, that's crazy. Like, I'm going to extrapolate that thought into what I'm thinking about currently, which is the problems of dualistic thinking that is prevalent in through theological, cultural dripping with monotheism of like good and evil. There's a bad way to do things and a wrong way to do things. Very black and white thinking.
Yeah.
But in order to find peace and solace, according to Far Eastern philosophy, like Tao and Buddhism, Eastern Buddhism, not Indian, but Far Eastern Buddhism, mostly fundamentally through Taoism, is the concept of understanding ambiguity, understanding that everything is gray. Nothing is black and white. Everything is gray. Hence the yin and yang, which is, Taoist symbol there. Everything is a blend and it's complementary to each other. And for some reason, Westerners are very significantly have a harder time understanding that not everything is
as black and white as they want to make it out to be.
It's not as black and white. Yeah. And this is why in English conversations that we have and in English thought that we always have, it's like we always have to bring up those are not mutually exclusive. That is a thought of logic that every conversation has at some point of one another. Those are not mutually exclusive. You can do both. This Western thinking is very potentially poisonous in the thought of like, anyway. That's what I'm extrapolating to. Can I speak on this and end it with this? This is from a book that I'm reading right now that I love. It's from Alan Watts, who is a big part of the spiritual movement that created the hippies in like the 60s and 70s, right? So I think he was like 50s, like post-war, 40s, 50s, 40s through 60s. And he was one of the main guys to understand Far Eastern thought. And this book is called The Way of Zen, which is about how the history, the background, and the practice of Zen Buddhism. And this chapter is about the Taoist belief, which is Chinese. I think this is really important. This is not a religious thing. So to be clear, Far East, they call it a religion, but it's only called religion because of the gaps in language. It's not a religion, depending on how you define it. So we would have to define religion. It's not a religion. It's more as a philosophy that became a culture. There is no deity to pray to. There is the sense of heaven and hell or the concepts of life and death are significantly less important. In fact, the Buddha, when asked, what is your thoughts on God and like death and stuff? He would stay quiet or he would respond with, those have nothing to do with your depression right now. Knowing where you come from, knowing where you go after you die doesn't solve your depression right now, you fuck. Like that was his answer. I'm not going to answer that. What are you doing? Anyway, so this is really interesting. So I think it's like very, the point is, I think it's especially to a Westerner, I think this philosophy is very beneficial to whatever theology that you do have in life. And I love this quote. This is a story of the centipede. So like Taoism is a lot about not overthinking, to trust yourself, trust your conscience, your natural self, just like a child is always happy and always knows what to do and says hi to strangers and doesn't think about the social consequences of having to say hi to stranger and like being anxious and stuff like that, right? So it's about returning back to the childlike spontaneity of like letting your soul be your soul, kind of ridding yourself of the rigidity brought to you by schooling and education and nihilism that is very natural as humans grow up from childhood. Okay, he says like this. So this is a story of the centipede. The creativity, the power of man's spontaneous natural functioning, a power which is blocked when one tries to master in terms of formal methods and techniques. And this is very much to do with mixing. Hold with me on this. The centipede was happy, quiet, until a toad in fun said, pray, which leg goes after which? This worked his mind to such a pitch. He lay distracted in a ditch considering how to run. And then it says, while it is true that the arts employ what are to us highly difficult technical disciplines, it is always recognized that they are instrumental and secondary, and that superior work has the quality of an accident. Okay? So this is why with the podcast, me and Lou are constantly, and Mix with the Masters is so boring for many people. It's like, because they don't talk about compression. They don't talk about EQ and how to use it. It's like, yeah, sure, that's important. But to those that are actually skilled and like kind of have gotten beyond the valley of technicality there, the technical skill, the technical difficulties is always recognized as instrumental. It's important. It is part of the reason why they're able to get to where they are. But it is secondary. And that superior work has the quality of an accident, catching lightning in a bottle, recording every single take because you don't know which one is going to be. Like, what, even with like movies, they improv some lines and those are the ones, improv some scenes, and those are the ones that really make that scene like resonate with people, right? Yeah. there is something innately in within all of us. We have this need, desire. I want to emphasize the importance of trusting your instincts. Both, like, if you need to clear your conscience and you can, if you can get over your ego and figure out what you want to do to improve yourself, to get over yourself, how you can improve, and then get over yourself to be happy. And if you desire for happiness, then I think naturally, subconsciously, the human part of you will be able to come out more for, more strongly. The part of you that is just spontaneous,
more spontaneous.
That's the word. Thank you. More spontaneous. The part of you that is more childlike and innocent because there's no guilt weighing you down. And thus you'll be able to speak with people more confidently, more openly, more friendly. And thus you will get more jobs and more gigs. Because again, it's not about the mixing. It's not about the compressor. It's not about the EQ. I know people hate it. But the reason... Okay, and this is where it comes back to, is the reason why use your ears is such stupid, antiquated, but also brilliant advice, is because at the end of the day, even my 5-year, 6-year-old child can slightly articulate why he likes a song. He has a foundational level of taste. He doesn't know why the density and like the aggression and the excitement is, he doesn't understand that it's coming from the top end or the boom of the kick drum or the snare, but he understands that it is exciting, that it is thrilling, and that that's why he likes it. And it's this foundational taste that we all have. This, you must clear your conscience. You must work on yourself to come back to that, to recognize the taste. And I genuinely think if you trust your taste, if you trust yourself, if you clear your conscience, you will actually mix better and be given opportunities to work on better songs, because you'll network better and meet people better over time through years of having better conversations, years of being more optimistic, years of being a go-giver and being part of a community, years of thinking with an abundance mindset, which, by the way, is not a decision. You don't have to wait. Truly, people that are those that are optimistic and abundant don't wake up and think, I'm going to have an abundance mentality today. I'm going to be optimistic today. No, they have habits and thoughts, and they've worked on themselves enough where that is second nature. Truly, someone that is kind is not someone that has to consciously decide to be kind. The person that is wants to give a gift but has to determine whether or not to give the gift had to think about the opposite, considered the option of not being kind, not giving that gift. Thus, are you truly kind if you truly considered not giving the gift, right? You're not. That's the point. Those that are sincerely, truly kind work on it for years and work on themselves self-consciously. Some people naturally are more in tune with this. Some people are not and have to consciously work on this. And I'm in the camp of I'm consciously trying to work on this always. Those that are actually kind don't have to choose to be kind. And those are the people that other people will practice nepotism on. All right. We'll want to give gigs to. Lou and I want to give gigs to those that deserve it. Front of mind, those that deserve it, those that we see working hard, right? Just like anybody else can. That's practical. That's practical. It's not any hate against anybody. It's just, yeah, we want to give gigs to the people that we see are working hard, that deserve it. And when we have gigs to give, by the way, I'm not saying that we always have gigs to give. All right. But the point is, work on yourself, let go, stop coping, get therapy if you need it. I'm not saying everybody needs it, but the whole David Goggins, suck it up and be patient, is also scary and will eventually break for most people. It will break. It will break. You must learn to be happy. You must learn at the end. Go back and listen to my 100-mile ultramarathon story if you need to, the process of understanding what it truly means to be successful. Okay? Go back and listen to that story. This is important. And I bring this up constantly because I see this all the time in our industry. People struggling to love themselves and not realizing it. People struggling to be able to articulate what they want, which is some form of happiness and how to get there. They're incapable of articulating it. They're not courageous enough to do the work to figure out what that means to them. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So the point of this episode is that, like, you will have your lifetime earnings will increase. I like that. Instead of saying like your income will increase, because that, like, what is that? What is that time scale? But I'll say your lifetime earnings will increase, which is probably true. Your lifetime earnings will increase. Your satisfaction from your relationships and friendships will increase. You will become a better friend. You will get better gigs. Your manager will actually like you. If you will likely, more likely to get a manager, okay? You'll more likely convince artists that they want to work with you because they tend to trust you because you're confident, all right? You will make better EQ and compression moves because for fucking once in your life, you actually trust your instincts. And you think, oh my gosh, this is a crazy looking EQ. Maybe I'm wrong. You actually trust your instincts, okay? You don't feel the pressure of judgment around you. I think this is all part of the serious craft. And this is something that everyone must consider if you want to take your craft to the next level. And this is the episode that nobody wants to listen to. Statistically, these episodes get the least amount of clicks. And it's no secret why. Nobody wants to talk about this, hear about this. And they don't have they're too nearsighted to see how important these far out distant skills are actually related to and how close they actually are to the development, growth, and progress of one's career with these skills, how aligned they are. Mm-hmm. And the older that we get, me and Lou, you and I, the older that we get, yes, we're becoming better mixing and better at mastering, but the more true these concepts become, Lou, I'm going to shut up. I need you to, I keep overtaking the time to talk. Lou, I mean, talk some sense into me or into these people.
The funny thing is, I hate to simplify it in this sense, but it's common sense, which is something my dad always said. Common sense is not very common. And whenever he would get frustrated with a situation, he would repeat, common sense. Because the sad part is, most of this isn't hard. It's not hard to think about. It's not hard to agree with because it's all very agreeable information. But it just kind of comes back to like, you need to work on yourself in order to see yourself grow. You know, if you wanted to see, I'm trying to figure out what the reference is, but the whole idea is that if you wanted to be molded into something, sometimes you have to break it back down to just the putty. You know, if you fucked up on a form, right, if you're just working with some clay and you're trying to build something up and you're trying to form it in the right way, but you can't seem to get it right, it's okay to just smash it all back down and just start from scratch. If you feel like you are in a position where you're kind of fighting yourself in order to move forward, it's okay to just go seek help or go take a break, take a vacation, do what you got to do. And you'll find yourself being able to push further than you thought you did before. And this has been the case for a lot of people. A lot of times, once people start getting out of their own egos, out of their own head, they start succeeding more. And it feels like that's no secret because you see it all the time. A lot of very confident people are also not very pessimistic. You know, and we see petty people. We see 50 Cent out there buying tickets to shows he's not in. You know, intending to go to. We know these petty people. But if you look at his confidence and in his team, he does develop a lot of people. And you do hear stories about the elite sometimes screwing people over. You hear about, what was it? Young Buck opened an account, 50 put some money into it, and then 50 took over the account, you know. And it's like, okay, we hear these things. Cool. But we're talking about the exception and not the, what is it? What is the phrase? That's
the exception, not the rule.
Exactly.
These but are there's outliers. Something,
huh?
The parasitic elite is an outlier.
Yeah, it's not something that's actually there. And this is going to sound really funny, but my version of success is happiness. One of the most iconic conversations in my life that I've ever had with anybody was with Keisha, because it was the first time I felt like I could be very honest with somebody of a higher position and they actually resonate with what I said. What she asked me, she's like, so what is it exactly that you want? Like, why, you know, what got you into engineering? I'm like, I don't know. I just like it. I just really like it. And I just want to provide for me and Anna. That's it. Like, as long as I have a roof over my head, food in my mouth, and my bills are covered, I honestly don't need anything else. Nothing else impresses me. And dude,
very wise, by the way. It's very wise to understand that level. I like it. I don't need to give an existential reason or motivation to it. I just like it.
Yeah.
Very
wise. And the funny thing is, like, one of the role models that I have in this lifetime has nothing to do with music, but rather what real success looks like to me. And it's actually my wife's parents, Anna's parents. I don't have to look at his account. I know he's okay. I know he's fine. The dude owns 3 houses. You're fine. He runs a business where he employs his family along with other people of the community and things like that, and gives opportunities to people who don't necessarily have the best opportunities out there right now. They're still working towards those opportunities. And yet it seems like he wants for nothing and has the ability to have anything, and yet still wears the same jeans, the same button-ups. He just has, like, every time I see him and his wife together, even at their age, they still, like, they look like they just started dating still. You know, and I don't see any sense of resentment or fear or regret or anything in their life. It doesn't seem like they have to have a nice car to show off, to show their success. They don't have to have the flashiest TV in their living room. They like to host a lot, and the food we eat is usually just like birria, maybe some tacos, maybe some chicken. You know, it's very basic stuff. But the entire family is just happy to be together. You want to know what success is? Look at the people that they surround themselves with. And I said this early on in the episode, which was the community they foster or that they turn away is who they are. You know, if you foster people who are genuinely happy to be around you, no matter what success level they are, it can be successful people wanting to hang out with people with less successful people, but they genuinely treat each other as equals. That's success to me.
Yeah.
Anything else is extra. That's why I always tell people, like, when they ask me about cars and stuff, I'm like, I don't care. I like Lotus. Nobody likes Lotus. I don't know why nobody likes Lotus cars, but I love Lotus cars. You know why? Because they're cheap and they still look good. I don't care how much your car costs. It does the same thing my Civic does. It's just a little faster.
Your talking makes me want to address the myopic perspective of extrapolating what I'm saying into saying that, like, everybody that's doing poorly it doesn't have self-control, which is not the case.
No, many there's a lot of people who have self-control that maybe not hit their goals yet.
Yet. That's yet. The word. Yet. Yeah. Yet, for sure. And it may take decades.
Yeah.
It may take decades. And it's very difficult, especially in our industry, where the standard is to not make it.
Yeah.
Right. Eventually, a software engineer is going to get a job. Maybe, like, not at Google or Apple. But eventually they'll get a job.
Yeah.
But for actors, actresses, musicians, anything of that kind, very hyper-competitive, creative, the standard is to not make it.
Yeah.
It's very difficult.
But and the then question maintaining is, any level always of becomes, is what is make it?
Yeah, for sure. Exactly, right? That's another conversation to have. But the point is, what I'm not trying to say, what I'm not trying to insinuate is the myopic and near, the myopic means nearsighted or like very narrow-minded perspective of saying, well, I'm not saying that wealthy people are open-minded and optimistic and no, what I'm saying is that there are people that are up and down across the scale, all over the board, everywhere. But we're talking about trajectories. We're not talking about current positions. For example, like you, when you brought that up, it's so amazing that you get to see firsthand, like, a healthy relationship. There are a lot of people that grow up never having seen a healthy relationship. And it's no wonder that they're incapable of trusting another human being and maintaining a healthy relationship themselves.
That's the standard they grew up with.
Yeah, they've never seen it.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that it's not possible, right?
Yeah.
And that's kind of what we're also talking about. It's like, yes, sure. There is unfairness all around. The reason why the victimhood mentality works so well and is so cyclical is because, and why nobody corrects you if you do that. The reason why nobody corrects you when you start pointing out all this negative stuff is because you are right. The person who says those things are not incorrect. They're not incorrect. Mm. Life is unfair. And it's very cyclical because you're not wrong. And it's validated.
Yeah.
Yes, there is issues. Probably, maybe because of the color of your skin, maybe because of religion or a country that you're born in, definitely because of the country you're born in, for sure. Yeah. Yeah, that's actually a valid excuse.
And it sucks.
That's an actual valid excuse. And you are more than welcome, and it is societally, and it is very acceptable in society to desire and to get validation from everyone around you that those are actual valid reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's those who say, I don't care if they're valid. I refuse to have my destiny determined.
Yeah.
And then they work on themselves. They get themselves out. That's what I'm saying. Yeah, it's very careful. People tend to extrapolate from these sorts of conversations that, you say, what about the other people that are unfair? The other people that are different communities and stuff? No, this thought is bigger than that. It's including different scenarios. It's if anything, it's more important for those that have never seen a healthy relationship, or that have never seen true wealth, or true happiness within a family or in a personal environment. Even if you reference that you can take is there's something that you can Google right now. It's a list of 10 questions. It's a survey for yourself. It's called the ACE quiz. It's to determine how much trauma that you had in your childhood. And it's not a perfect test, but it's only 10 question things like, was someone in your home or in your immediate family sent to prison? Were you verbally abused? Were you, you know, things like that. So it's like, it's a list of 10 questions. And the more you answer yes to, the more statistically likely that you are to end up becoming neurotic, develop mental issues, to be incapable of like having heart attack. Heart disease, I think, is like directly, like dying early is directly related to childhood trauma.
Damn.
And for sure. There is a direct correlation there. This is beyond me. There are studies that show it. Just look it up. And I do think that we can work through those. It's our job to find out where we're hurting and to work through those regardless of where we come from. Mm-hmm. And it is also very myopic, incredibly narrow-minded to assume that people that are better off and wealthier have less of a hard time across the board. There are some things that they don't struggle with. They may not struggle with debt. They may not have to buy their own car, but there are other things that come with having everything. You know, there are other problems that they have too. I'm not trying, do not, just like we shouldn't minimize, the problems of
anyone, really.
We shouldn't minimize the problems of anyone. It is dishonorable to think. It is incredibly, truly, you are considering yourself to be less than or more than if you think that one is superior, one problem is superior to another. It speaks volume on your perspective.
Yeah.
Be careful of that. Okay. I think I've said everything that I wanted to say and defended my positions, and we've gotten to the thesis.
Now, with that said, if you do want more technical episodes...
Yeah, go ahead. Pitch it, dude.
We do have 2 releases every week with the exclusive content for the podcast released every, I believe, what is it? Wednesday, Thursday are the releases. Am I right on that one?
Wednesday, Thursdays. Yes, they are released on Wednesday and Thursday.
It's only $4 a month or $40 for the year. And they are strictly technical. There may be a little bit of philosophy going on when we look at, well, I say we, but it's actually James and DK on these episodes, where they actually look at people's commentary as far as their approach to things, their thoughts on things, the technical gear, plugins, things of that nature. They'll extrapolate information from different interviews and actually go on and talk about their views on it. But these are all technical base. So if you want more episodes, and if you want to see a backlog of how long has this been going on, there's about a year worth of 2 episodes a week
There's hundreds of episodes out there right now. Yeah. And if you subscribe, you unlock all of them all at once. You could binge through all of them and then quit the next month.
Oh, yeah. Which, yeah, I'm not going to lie, that would be a very impressive feat in that alone. But it would only cost $40 to attempt it. We'll call that the next challenge, the Mixing Music Podcast
Challenge. $4 if you subscribe for the month.
Yeah.
Binge everything. And then unsubscribe is $4.
That should be the next TikTok challenge. Hours and hours
of technical information and takeaways from every episode. Takeaways of how you can improve your mixing and stuff. Which, again, don't get me wrong, is important. But I, at the end of the day, is significantly less important than getting your mind right. That's the point.
Yeah.
Getting your mind right will help you be better with your tools. And on that note, happy... So hold on. Exclusive podcasts are mixingmusic.com. mixingmusicpodcast.com/exclusive. Forgot to mention that. On that note, happy mixing, my friends, and stay saucy.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.